The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, welcome back. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price, and today I'm joined by a comedian who I first gigged with in about 2001 or 2002, and she's absolutely brilliant, and she's gone on to such fantastic things, and it's genuinely thrilling when I see this person doing well. There's so many comics who I watch doing well, and I loathe them, and this one I actually want to do well. It's the wonderful Jen Brister. Hello and welcome. Oh,
hello, Tom. It's lovely, lovely to talk to you.
You too.
Is it that long?
Yeah, man. I can remember.
You know, I remember where it was. Was it the Enterprise?
The Enterprise. Oh, God. The Enterprise.
It was the Enterprise. Yeah. Claire Ward and I went.
Yes.
And we were watching you and Beth and, who else was
Lydia.
On? Lydia. Yeah.
So this is my wife, Beth, and her comedy partner, Lydia. They did stuff together before they split up and Beth got a proper job. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I can remember it. It was summer and I remember it quite vividly. And also, who else was there? Oh, God. We kept talking about the size of his...
Ed Weeks.
Yeah, we were talking about Ed's cock, weren't we? Yeah,
he went on to star in the Mindy Project. So now if you're a fan of that, you can go and check that out. go and watch those episodes very carefully. Massive wang. Anyway, he'll be thrilled
absolutely
that we've talked about it.
Absolutely massive wang.
Imagine if Ed Weeks stumbles upon this one day and actually chooses to listen. And at the
opening, what are the chances?
Very low. In terms of him wanting to listen to me talk, very low indeed. But also, Jen Brister, the thing about you that I love about you is that you were... I was really, really about to pack it all in once at Loonies at the Asylum, a club that I used to run. And I was done. I'd just been crap for several months on the bounce. And you told me not to.
Did I?
You were very nice. You were very nice and rational. So don't give up.
Positive. Very. But that's not like me at all.
So, yeah. I mean, I will send exactly. No, it would be unlike me to do the same thing as well. I'm usually... I would, if it was vice versa.
Relentlessly negative about this industry.
Yeah, I'd be going, fucking right. Walk away, mate. Walk away.
While you've got your dignity, just back off.
So, now, the first thing I'm very pleased to tell you, Jen, I don't know if you... Have you had a look through your Amazon purchase listery? Have you looked into that? Oh, great.
Why would I?
No, right, exactly. It makes this podcast even better if you don't, because we are going back to the previous century. We're going to 1999 to start off.
Oh, Jesus!
We're going to July 1999, right? Do you know what this is already? Can you remember?
No, of course I can't. I can't remember what I bought last week.
The first thing you bought on Amazon... by Wendy Castor is a book called The Lesbian Sex Book.
Oh, Jesus, that's so embarrassing.
Hang on, are you... No.
Yes, that will have been just when I'd just come out.
Right.
I came out in 1998.
Okay.
And in 1999, I was probably trying to get laid.
Right.
And this would have been my attempt to find out how somebody had recommended me that book, actually, and said, look, if you want to know the ins and outs and what's up, not buy this book. And do you know what? Firstly, I don't know where that book is. And I genuinely can't tell you if it was any good or not. I suspect it wasn't.
I think this is a really important thing, that if you're coming out and you've got all these, this thing that's going to happen and you know what you are, but you still need to look at a manual.
Well, I'm sure lots of people don't, but I certainly...
No, but a lot of people, I mean, irrelevant of what orientation you are sexually, you still need to go, right, how does this actually work? And this is like a Haynes manual for...
Oh, God.
It is very informative, according to someone. It's definitely good for reference. Here's a good one from Titania. Very detailed for those new to the team.
So that would have been... How many stars does it get, out of curiosity? What does Amazon deliver?
Titania's giving it 5 stars. Very pleased with new to the team. That's something which our very good friend Frog Stone, who has previously been on this podcast as well, Frog Stone uses that phrase, a team player, which I thoroughly enjoy for
lesbian. I love Frog.
She won't say lesbian. She hates the phrase lesbian. She uses team player.
Oh, does she? Yeah. Oh, I have no problem with lesbian. Right. Lesbian!
The Lesbian Sex Book, A Guide for Women Who Love Women, that has got... It's only had 6 ratings. And it's got...
Wow, popular.
It's not done that well. 39% 5 stars, so 4.2 out of 5. But it reads like a 5, Jen. It reads like a 5.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, lesbians definitely know what they're talking about when they're reviewing books, so we should take that as read.
Do you want me to review?
That is a good...
Can I chuck in a little star from you? Are you happy for me to?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. What do you think? I don't. What should I give it?
Come on. I mean, you know, you're now.
Let's give it five. Well, let's give it five.
Yeah.
Why not?
Exactly. I mean,
Jeff Bezos says five stars.
You've read the book, and here you are, in 2020. Are you still a lesbian? Still a?
Yeah. Let me just double check with my girlfriend. Wait, still? Is this still happening, love? Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, as a nod. Great. Yeah. Okay, congratulations. In that case, it's definitely five stars, and it's all thanks to this book.
I cannot believe that was my first Amazon purchase. That is hilarious.
What an excellent start that is. All right, let's leap on ahead. So also, I should say, what's going on with Jen Brister as we flick through the years now? We're in 2000 and nothing in 2000, nothing in 2001. Well, I know roughly what you're doing because you're starting stand-up comedy in about this time, right?
Yes, so I sort of started in... Well, I was kind of attempting to do stand-up at about this time. Mm. 2000, I think I was in the BBC comedy semi-final.
Oh, God, those fucking competitions.
Oh, those fucking awful competitions. I was dreadful. I was absolutely dreadful at them. I just never got anywhere with any of them. But it must have been around 1999, 2000 that I sort of started in London, but I had been when I was living in Australia, I had been gigging over there in 1998.
Oh, so how long were you in Australia for?
A year, and like literally doing. So when I was in Melbourne, there was a regular night on a Sunday for open micers at the ESPY, and I'd go almost every Sunday. And if I wasn't performing, I'd be watching.
Right.
And I died more than I did well.
Yeah,
I have no idea why I thought I could do stand-up when it was patently obvious from those gigs that I couldn't.
Yeah, but thank God you persist. This is the thing, isn't it? That, you know, going out and gigging is the aggressive Darwinism of stand-up comedy, which stand-ups ignore. They ignore being told by audiences. And by the way, having seen you, you definitely didn't die whenever I saw you. But going out and dying, you would think that is the process of being told to stop doing this. And yet there is something in stand-ups that perverts the Darwinism. And we keep going, we don't die off. And the shit suddenly get good. That's what happens with so many stand-ups, isn't it?
But I think that is often the stand-ups that you see that continue, that are on the circuit, and whether you like them or you think they're average or whatever, are just those people that manage to take that kind of kicking, you know, because it is a kicking to die. And there are plenty of people, I believe, that would be far funnier and better at stand-up, but they just couldn't take the death. So it's kind of necessary to get good at this. But there is a sort of perverse Darwinism in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It's inverted. And you do, and the perversity of the death is you grasp a nettle to die on stage as a stand-up, and you have to basically grasp the nettle, pop it in your front pocket, not even in a pocket, pop it in your genitals, actually in your pants.
I was going to say, actually in your pants.
Yeah, rub it
and
against,
rub it around.
Yeah, and then keep it there for a long, hot, sweaty summer. That is about how long you have to die for. That's what you have to go through, I think. And once you've done that, though, my God, you blossom. The chrysalis evaporates, and you know you're wonderful. But you've got to do that, haven't you? You've got to do that. And I never did. I was too cautious. I made myself a very bulletproof 15, 20 minutes, and I lived on that. And one of my stand-up regrets is that I didn't push that harder and go and really stink out some rooms, which I'd be prepared to do now.
I think maybe, just to play devil's advocate, but I think maybe also you had a clearer idea of who you are and what you wanted to say, whereas I think that I didn't, and I think that's why I was dying. And it wasn't just about I don't think I at the time I definitely don't think it was taking any risks. It was just that I wasn't being entirely me,
right?
And I didn't know how to.
God, so, well, how wonderful was that moment though, when you suddenly did become entirely you? When did that happen?
Jesus, I mean. Okay, so I would say it took me over 10 years, definitely 12 years, I would say.
Jesus, that's such a long time. That is a long time.
It is, and I would say really 14, 15 years when I actually believed it. 12 years when audiences could see it, and 14 or 15 years when I could see it.
Yeah.
So it took me that long.
I remember seeing you, I think it was Jonglers. I hadn't seen you for years. And you came and did a filthy Jonglers gig, and I was like, "Holy shit!"
what gig was that? Was that dreadful?
Camden, I think, or maybe Portsmouth. It was pretty. It was dreadful. They're all dreadful.
Oh, Portsmouth is dreadful. God, that's an absolutely shithole of a gig, isn't it? Which doesn't exist anymore. But
no, thankfully. Portsmouth itself does still exist, to be absolutely clear there, just in case you're wondering.
And for anyone listening that lives in Portsmouth, I salute you.
Indeed.
And absolutely nothing wrong with the town, just the gig.
Yes, quite right. Southampton, though, much better city. That's a joke. It's a lol. That's what we do.
Oh, there
Stop
we go.
It.
Come on.
You have been bought red-handed.
October 2006, at 7 years after you read the first manual on being a lesbian, unexpected pleasures, leaving heterosexuality for a lesbian life. Jen, come on, 7 years now.
Oh, yes. That was, I bought that for my girlfriend.
Right, okay. Did she know she was your girlfriend at the time, or was that the beginning of that process?
She had been, she'd only been in a relationship with men.
Uh-huh.
And we had got together in 2006. She was struggling with coming to terms with her sexuality, with being with a woman. Well, I say struggling, confused is probably a better word to describe how she was feeling. And she didn't identify as a lesbian, but knew that she was attracted to me. So it was all very confusing. So if she had identified as a lesbian, and there was no pansexual or any of that stuff being banded about, and bisexual to her is also for whatever reason didn't fit. So pansexual is something that she feels more comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I've got to make sure she doesn't dump me. So I'll get this book. And so I bought this book for her as a means of trying to help her, because I didn't understand what she was going on about. I was like, well, maybe you're just a lesbian, but you don't know it.
Mm.
She was like, no, I'm not a lesbian.
So anyway. Is this the girl you're still with now?
Yes, this is my long-term partner.
Yeah. Okay. Now, oh, this is difficult because we're talking about her. I don't really want to pry into her life. But does she now? Do you think she would now say, I'm a lesbian? Or no, she doesn't identify as that?
No, she would identify as pansexual, I think.
Okay.
Somebody, yeah.
But then this wasn't...
attracted to the person.
Yes, right. Okay, right. But then this wasn't known, was it? It wasn't really a thing that...
I mean, I didn't know what pansexual was until I think Joe Lycett started talking about it. It was like, what is this pansexual thing he's banging on about?
Yeah, Janelle Monáe did it as well. Janelle Monáe was big on it, wasn't she?
Who was?
Janelle Monáe. I think that's right. The singer and actor.
Yes.
She did pansexual. And everyone, what's that? And it was like, oh, that's quite... That's
and everyone
quite
went,
cool.
Oh, no, that seems quite legitimate.
Yeah. I think so. Right. Okay. So you're buying this book to make sure your girlfriend doesn't leave you.
Well, and also it's a means of assisting her out of heterosexuality into whatever her new... I just thought, come on, you're a lesser love. But obviously that wasn't the case. But to sort of ease her into whatever was the queerer side of her sexual preferences.
It's fair to say it's worked, because you're very much still together 14 years later. So, again,
yes,
great book.
I mean, listen, I tell you what, comedy and having a very thick skin really did prepare me for this relationship. So a lot of rejection, and I didn't take no for an answer.
Oh,
so
this is really helpful, because I've just realised, I've just did the speech about never dying on stage, but I have performed my jokes to absolute silence and stony cold stares from Beth for the last best part of 17 years now. So you're right.
Yeah,
fuck.
But literally, if you have a partner that goes that after the gig, tells you every single individual that didn't laugh, you can take anything.
you can
handle it. Absolutely can.
August and Everything After, Counting Crows. That's one of those albums that I cannot listen to, because I listen to it constantly with an ex, even though that was like 18 or 19 years ago. That is still off limits. Isn't that weird?
I know. I can. There is definitely music that I can't listen to because it has quite sort of, very vivid memories of something I'd like to forget.
Yes.
That album is one of Chloe's, certainly one of her favourite kind of, in my 20s, albums. In one of her many moves, as we do in our 20s and 30s, we're always moving house, aren't we? She lost it. And so I bought it for her, I think, as a gift.
This is the thing. I talk about this all the time on this show, but it's so nice when CDs and books were buyable as material objects, because then that gave us... That was a really important currency. If you're like me, terrible at buying presents, CDs and books, that was the only thing I understood to buy for people. And that was taken away.
I literally only bought friends' books and CDs.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, well, you can still buy books, to be fair. People will still take books as a gift.
But CDs are off now. That's done. Gone.
No one owns a CD player.
No, nobody. No.
The only way I can play a CD player, well, I used to be able to, was in my Mac until my kids stuck some Lego in there or something. And I can't... I
that's
can't stick anything
now.
In it. That's gone now.
If you stick Lego in there, surely it just plays the Lego movie, doesn't it? Does that?
Please don't talk to me about that bloody film.
That film, I think, has given me has given me some mild symptoms of epilepsy.
Everything is awesome.
It's like the feeling of Lego under the sod of your foot, but inside your brain.
I can't even watch it. As soon as the children want to put it on, I'm like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. It cuts from shot to shot, and you start to.
The movements of the Lego people are so sort of jerky and ugh. Anyway,
yeah,
I'm sure it's for children, isn't it? So I don't know why I'm wanging on about
it. It's for kids. Well, this is what happens. The things that are for kids, films and TV shows that are for kids, we still get up in arms when they don't entertain us. This is The Simpsons has spoiled us. You see, we expect something for kids to entertain us as well, and when it doesn't, we get furious. So this is why I get very upset about Doctor Who. I don't know where you stand on the Doctor Who thing, but Doctor Who is for my 8-year-old son to love. Right? If I also enjoy it, happy days. But if I watch it and think it's a bit childish, I do not get to complain, because it is for children fundamentally. And yet, you go on Twitter, it's full of people moaning about Doctor Who being rubbish. And you're like, guys, it's for kids.
I know. You can't really get into a conversation with Doctor Who fans in much the same way as that you can't get into a rational discussion with anyone about Star Wars. It's just, you have to back away from that shit and go, you play on your own.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. There's no point. Politics, Star Wars, and kids' entertainment shows, just don't have those conversations at dinner parties.
No, for heaven's sake. Space.
Then lots of exciting sexy things. Office for Max 2011.
Oh, get in.
Yes, please.
Oh, sexy times. That was my first Mac.
Oh, lovely.
My first Mac purchase. So that was an exciting thing, because I must have got something like a little mini corporate.
Right.
And I was like, and I invested that in a little bit of sort of hard tech equipment, Tom. You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you mean. Right? Yeah, with the keys and the buttons on it in the screen.
We've got a buttons and screen and some little kind of cables and things. But delicious.
Yeah. Absolutely lovely. It's an exciting time when you get your first Mac, isn't it? Mine was back then as well, about 2010.
My God, because I'd had PCs up until that point, and they used to crash, and they'd take ages to load, and then the whole thing was like a piece of crap. And then suddenly this Mac arrived, and I was dry humping it every day. It was so good. Absolutely. It was like, what is this fabulous machine?
Yeah, it wasn't your kids putting Lego in the machine. It was you. You were fucking your Mac with Lego.
I was my Mac, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. I can save our way.
Hello, I'm Justin.
And I'm Lucy.
And together we are the hosts of Plenty Questions.
It's a very straightforward general knowledge quiz.
We ask you 20 questions, one after the other, 5-second gap in between, and you shout the answers out.
And then you tweet us to let us know how you've got on.
See if you can get 20 out of 20. No one has so far, but that's because we haven't started doing it yet.
But we will. And there's also going to be some fiendish brain teasers, so join us for Plenty Questions.
We like to listen to Toast, and we're not the kind who would boast, and even in spite of the host, we still like to listen to Toast. La, la,
la. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Welcome along if you've just joined us. That doesn't really happen on podcasts, does it, Jen Bristol? I'm sort of going back into radio mode now.
You've gone very much into radio there.
Really went radio.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the flip.
Sorry for that, guys. You're not listening to magic. You're listening to My Mate Bought a Toaster. And thank you for listening. We've got the brilliant Jen Bristol. We're in 2012 now, Jen. You bought loads of David Sedaris for yourself, I think, here June 2012, because we all know David Sedaris is an absolute genius, do we not?
Yes, they would have been gifts. I regularly buy David Sedaris as a gift for people. I still do.
Good.
People are like, I'm like, have you read him? They go, no. And I'm like, right, don't worry. I'll help you out there. And then I go and buy them like with all the hubris in the world that they're going to enjoy it, like 6 books. Help yourself.
Sold. Yes. That is quite right as well. So hang on. So you say Sedaris, but I said Sedaris.
Well, I used to say Sedaris, then every time I hear him saying his own name or being introduced in the United States, they say Sedaris. So I was like, I gotta go with how they. Am I wrong?
He probably does know how to say it.
I guess he knows how to pronounce his own name. But I don't think he gives a shit. Like, Sedaris. I mean, he lives here, doesn't he? He must be used to everyone calling him David Sedaris.
Anything under the sun. He's very, very funny indeed. And if you've never experienced him, cannot recommend it enough. And I think he did loads of radio shows as well. I think he's done his books on radio.
I think now on BBC Sounds, there's a glut of his previous series, basically him reading from his books, which you can chow down on. So if you, particularly now we're still in lockdown, if you want to tuck into that.
Finish this podcast first, though, obviously.
Oh, no, obviously, yeah.
Very important. Very
sure,
important.
Sorry.
Oh, well, actually, to be honest, by this point, they've probably listened to the adverts, so I've made my money from my listeners. So we
can go.
They can go fuck themselves now. We can really kick back and, yeah, we can really drop the quality we've been keeping up so well.
Oh, right.
Here's an absolute joyful start to February. Of course, in February, you want to buy on the 3rd of February some Birkenstocks. You middle-class cliche. Get your Birkenstocks.
Oh, what year was this?
2012.
Okay, so I'm going to Adelaide.
Mate. But hang on.
I'm going to the Comedy Festival.
Then the 9th of February. You like the Birkenstocks so much on the 3rd of February for £32.
Yeah.
On the 9th of February, you go and buy another pair.
Ah, yes. Okay, so I think I know which pairs I buy. I buy a pair of black ones, do I?
And then I buy
a pair of silver ones.
Yes, you've got a very good Birkenstock recollection going.
Listen,
on.
Listen, I tell you why, because I still got them. That's why.
Oh, really? Well, they bloody hell, they last.
No, not the silver ones. They died. The black ones, because I don't really wear them. But yes, I am very much. Listen, I like a comfortable shoe, and I definitely at the time was highly criticised for my footwear, as I would wear them out, as almost like they were fashion. And I remember Susie Ruffle couldn't actually get her head around the fact that I had left the house, not only left the house, but gone into public, not only gone into public, but in the summer had done a gig in Birkenstocks. She was like, mate, you're wearing sandals on stage.
Yeah, she's right. She's right.
There's what's left. How many more boxes are you ticking here? Well, obviously as a lesbian, all of them. But I was like, you know... I thought I stand by that decision, and I still think it's perfectly reasonable to wear sandals.
They've just got a very well supported ridge arch, haven't they? You've got a good arch with those.
And also, I have some weird what is it? Some metatarsal thingamajiggy.
Oh,
so they're the only ones that support them. Otherwise, my toes don't really support my foot properly, and so I get knee ache. Look, anyway.
Listen, dude. When you buy clothes. Any fashion item that you buy to support a physical problem you've got, that is, you are instantly in your at least 50s, if not 60s. Just FYI.
I don't want to talk about more orthotic insoles then. Shall I not mention those? It's just not a good time.
It's fine. Like I said, the adverts have been now, so the quality can really drop off off a cliff. It's fine. So funny you bought these sandals. I love it.
Two pairs.
All right, two. Exactly. She's double Birkenstocked and she remembers them well. And they're still alive to tell the tale. 2013 then, loads more stuff. Oh, hello. Someone's bought a luxury oval cat bed. Is that where you put the Birkenstocks down at night, or did you actually get a cat?
Oh, yeah, we had a little Kit Kat. Yeah, our friends of ours, this is when we were still living in London, there was a stray cat.
Oh, yeah.
That had been living sort of, well, obviously was stray, but had obviously the owner had died right. At some point, and this poor little thing had been living out in Hackney somewhere, and our friends were sort of had fostered it and needed to give it a permanent home, and Chloe and I were like, we'll take it. And we did. So we took the little. He didn't last long because we didn't realise this, but he had cancer.
Oh, God, this is a really bleak bit of the podcast.
Christ. I know. Well, he had cysts and malignant cysts in his kidneys, poor little thing.
Oh.
But we, for whatever life he had left, which was a couple of years, we did our best to make it comfortable.
It's a very lovely story. It's a very nice story.
But he did die.
Okay.
That's the end of that story.
But to be clear, like you're telling a kid a moral story, to be clear, we will die. That is.
I just don't want you to think that there's a happy ending.
This isn't a fantasy. You know,
this is real life, guys. Deal with it.
Exactly. Real life.
Cats die.
Even realer deaths. That's what we do. If you've got a cat flap, one day that'll be pointless. Just telling it as it is.
Do you know what? We did have a cat flap in that flat the entire time we were living there. And then on the year that we left, we got the cat and then moved out. House that didn't have a cat flap. So we go.
May 2014, here's an absolutely classic item. And this is the reason. This is the reason that Amazon's a wonderful thing, because there'll be a story here. You bought on the 6th of May 2014 2 gas meter box keys. Oh, yeah, I love that stuff.
Oh, sexy times.
Sexy
okay.
times, because you couldn't, you know, if you were at home and you've got one of those boxes out the front of the house. And you can't get in there to do the meter business and to know you can switch the gas off. It's a fucking bullet. Along comes Amazon. Done it, mate. Absolutely done it.
Did we buy two?
You know, I think it was a set of two. Four.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
If we bought them, then we don't have them anymore. But I would think it's because we just moved house.
Yeah.
And our gas meter box does need a key. But I tell you what, is I don't think I've ever... I'm still using a fucking spoon to open that thing. So I don't know what happened to those gas meter keys. Maybe we bought them for someone else, but I've never seen them.
Well, I often think the thing about gas meter keys, and don't tell too many people this, Jen, we'll just keep this between us and the listeners. You can use those on any motherfucking gas meter box out there. They are. That is a universal key, right? You don't need to go and get them cut. So if you want to be malicious, if you've got anyone in your life and it's middle of winter and there's someone you don't like, maybe there's a neighbour making noise, just pop over there. You can unlock their gas meter and you can switch their gas off and you can actually freeze them to death.
Can you actually switch their gas
off? Right next to the gas meter is the cranker to switch off their gas.
Oh, God, that's really useful to know because there's a neighbour opposite me and I'd love to switch her gas off.
Oh, tell me.
Oh, she's an absolute... cow.
Oh no, does she not like the kids? That's often a starting point for problems.
Well, she just lost her shit with me over Christmas because I was trying to reverse my car and her son and her mother wouldn't move out the way, and I just went, please could you just move out the way, I'm trying to park my car.
Yeah.
And then she said that I had, and I'd said it from my car, by the way.
Yeah.
And then she said that I had intimidated her mother and had gone up to her and physically assaulted her mum, which I hadn't even got near her mum. And nor would I ever intimidate an elderly person. I had just said, and I'd asked several times if they'd move and they wouldn't. And I was like, please, could you move? I'm trying to park my car. Look, I realise I'm not coming out very well.
No, but hang on. What were they doing when you were saying, sorry, could you move? I need to park my car. Were they just looking at you?
No, just standing in front, behind my car. And in between their car, because they were unloading their car.
Right. So, I mean, in a way, they're lucky you didn't run them over. Really? Really? Well, when it comes down to it.
Well, I did think about it. But what happened was, is I semi-parked the car. I went, I can't believe I'm telling you this story.
Oh,
you know when you go down a petty wormhole? So I was like, I was tutting and doing that harumphing thing, which is so passive aggressive and British.
Yeah.
And I got out of the car. And at this point, I'd been driving the car for about 5 or 6 hours. I was absolutely exhausted.
Mm.
And so I thought, I'll leave them. They've got to unpack their car and then I'll go back. And when they... are finished, I'll park the car properly.
Yeah.
So I waited, I looked out the window, nobody there. I was like, great, got back in the car, went to reverse the car, boom, she's there, like Mr. Ben.
Fuck.
She just appeared out of nowhere. You know, I was like, what are you doing? And so I just said, look, could you please move out of the way? I'm trying to park my car.
Yeah.
And then she came to my door.
Wow, the car door or the door where you live?
No, then about an hour later, the daughter, she was really upset because she genuinely thought I had done something to her mum. Her mum had obviously said something to her.
Right.
And she was screaming and shouting and being, you know, abusive. And I didn't know what to say. I was like, look, do you want to have a conversation about this? And I'll tell you what happened. I know what happened. My son told me. And I went, okay, so we're not going to have a conversation about this. And I went, goodbye. And I just closed the door on her face. And then she, I'm pretty sure at some point she's keyed my car.
The car has your car been keyed?
Yes.
Yeah, it's her. It's absolutely her. Yeah.
So, but you know, whatever. I feel like if that's made her feel better, whatever. But
I mean, you say that. I think these neighbour rows can escalate very quickly, can't they?
But do you know what? I did that classic thing that I always do after a confrontation, is that I immediately thought, right, okay, I've done something awful.
Yes.
I'm a bad person.
Yes, why do
and
we
I
do
said,
that?
I said to Chloe, right, I've got to go around and apologise. And Chloe went, do not go around and apologise to that woman. She came over and shouted, she called you a cunt.
So now you've got her shouting at you, you've got her daughter shouting at you, and you've got Chloe shouting at you.
So it's her son, but yes, I've got a lot of people shouting at me.
Right.
And so I just thought, you know what, I'm going to leave it and let's never speak again. And we haven't.
Wow. Well, she'll never speak again if you turn her gas off.
And can I just say, she never claps.
Oh, you're kidding.
Literally has never stepped out of a door once to clap for key workers. So
unbelievable.
But then I was thinking maybe she really does need to isolate. She might be one of those people that's not safe for her to live.
Properly shielding.
Properly. Oh. Although to be fair, like...
You keep balancing this. You're too nice. You keep saying, well, maybe she's done this. I mean, you know, I've seen her killing a dog, but then maybe, you know, the dog was ill. It's that sort of... Stop balancing it. She's a murderer.
She punched a 2-year-old in the face, but I thought sometimes I want to punch a 2-year-old in the face. I mean... Certainly when mine were two, I did. I mean, you know.
Well, listen, let's get on to that topic, in fact, because not only did you buy the gas meter in a set of two, you also went and got some humans in a set of two, because I can see on May the 1st, 2014, you bought the book by Mark Kilby, Expecting Twins.
Oh, yes. So Chloe at this point is, I don't know, she's 5 months pregnant.
Right.
And we are being very cautious about buying anything for the babies.
Mm.
Because we're still like, we don't want to, just in case, we don't want to jinx it.
Absolutely, you mustn't. Yeah, of course, yeah.
So, but we figured we can buy a book. And if, do you know what I mean? That felt safe. So we bought the book and... as is the way with everything, Chloe read the book from cover to cover and I didn't even pick it up.
Yep.
So that is exactly who we are as human beings. I literally never read anything that might be of use to me. Mm-hmm. I just think I'll wing it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, you have two types of book person. You have a book owner and a book reader. I'm a book owner. I will gather the books around me and assume that, we've talked about this before on the show, osmosis will see me write. Somehow the wisdom of the book will get into my brain.
Yeah, I think that's how I work as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you know what? I can tell you for absolute fact, doesn't work, mate. Absolutely doesn't work. Just FYI, doesn't work. So the twins are incoming and you are preparing to be a mum at this point. So when were your delightful children born? When did they land?
They landed on the 25th of September, 2014.
Okay.
Yes, that's when they arrived. So
can you remember anything since then?
Do you know what? Very little.
Mm.
And which at the time I remember thinking, there's no way I'll forget this because it's horrific.
Yeah.
There's no, when people say they forget this, I was like thinking, I'll never forget this because this is so awful. but you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I have flashes that I remember, and obviously we were, you know, like a lot of parents with a digital camera on our phone, we obviously took bazillions of photos. And sometimes going back and looking at those, I think, oh, God, I completely forgot about that. And I forgot they even looked like that. Like, I was convinced that our children were the most beautiful, gorgeous, aesthetically pleasing to the eye children that have ever been born. And I look at them now and I think, Jesus Christ, they look like skinned rats.
I completely agree. I look back at pictures of my kids and they look like knuckles with nappies on. And yet at the time you're like, well, my child's gonna get spotted. Oh, I've got my model here, guys, because this guy is so handsome.
It's unbelievable. I think there's some sort of hormone that kicks in where you just sort of go, oh, my children are so amazing. And then it's only afterwards like, God, I must have been banging on about how gorgeous they were. And people must have been looking at me thinking, is she blind?
Yeah.
Does she not see what I see?
But there's that, the generation, our parents' generation, when you say the gorgeous thing, they look at you and they nod sympathetically because they're at the other side and they know that it's
yeah,
not true. It's exactly what everyone does. And the thing that really strikes about those early years, because it was awful for us as well, my eldest had colic, so he didn't sleep, so Beth and I nearly killed each other most days, and then having two as well with the 3.5 year age gap, blah, everyone's been through it and we've all done it, and some of us have done it without having to go to Durham. And the the thing that I remember doing a parenting podcast with Ollie Mann and Stuart Goldsmith, and I said, I know, and I got emotional, I said, I know that in 5 years' time, I will give anything to come back here today and be able to spend 10 minutes with this child. But at the moment, I'm just finding it so hard. And 5 years later, I can tell you, I absolutely fucking wouldn't give a thing to go back there and spend 10 minutes with a child that age like that again.
No way.
No.
And I think there are, like, Chloe feels very differently. She's constantly thinking, I wish we could go back and when they were babies. And I'm like, are you mentally ill? They didn't sleep till they were three.
Mm.
You and I nearly died from sleep deprivation. I have never felt so shit in my entire life. I think they were actually trying to kill us. One would sleep, then the other one would wake up, then the other one would sleep. And I was like, will you two just fucking just like sync this shit up and sleep at the same time?
The worst.
I can remember being in their bedroom on my knees. When one of them, I'd got one of them, I'd literally put his head down and gone, please go to sleep, please go to sleep. And he'd gone. I was like...
Unheard of.
Sort of a sense of euphoria. And then I just hear, nah, 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 nah. And then the other one kicks off. And I'm like, I'm literally on my knees in their room going... Do I want to go back to that?
No.
No.
But there's the thing that I will always take away from this is, do you know there's this, there's a Proust truism that he came up with. It's literally the only bit of Proust that I've read of these words, which is, to in order to be happy, one must, every day, one must swallow a toad. And that is true, right? At the beginning of every day, if you have to do something absolutely heinous and awful, for the rest of the day, you feel great. That's what exercise is built on, right? And I honestly believe now that in my life, I have swallowed the toad for approximately the last 8 years, right? I've done the agony, the lack of sleep, the getting fatter, sweating constantly. Don't know why, I'm just sweating all the time because this is like a physical endurance and mental and physical endurance.
And mental as well. God. Yeah.
But now coming out the other side, I'm starting to feel, and you must feel this with five-year-olds, like, okay, we might, maybe, you know, maybe they can watch a film and I can drift off to the kitchen and read a book. You know what I mean? You start to see freedom.
Oh, yeah. And also, you know, I mean, I've been very negative about it, but you know, the joy that your children give you when you get joy from them is surpasses any joy I've ever experienced. I have to say that. When things are good with the kids and they're making me laugh and they're being just themselves, and, you know, Chloe and I will just sit in the garden with a beer and watch them play their imaginary games. It's just, it's delightful. Yeah, it's absolutely delightful. And I wouldn't change it for the world, but the amount of shit you have to swim through to get to that, I mean, flickety-fuck.
Literal shit as well. But those moments, when they happen, A, they're quite few and far between, although they're increasing. They're on the increase at the moment.
That's why they're called moments.
Yeah, exactly right. But also, part of me... This is a very honest kind of thing, but like, I do really enjoy them and I feel really, and I do feel that happiness, but I slightly resent the agony it's taken. It's a bit like when a parent tells you we're going to go camping and you're going to enjoy it and you're like, I'm fucking not. And then you do and you feel a bit like, yeah, all right, I kind of do. Like, do you know what I mean? I feel
a bit like,
all right, yeah, this is, I suppose this is quite good.
It's, you get to a point where, you know, you can't really moan about it too much, it's, particularly with people that don't have kids, because they're like, oh, you know.
Shut up.
You know, they're like, mate, you didn't have to have kids. And it's not like I can tell them it was an accident, because, you know, they were really expensive.
That's quite the accident.
It was quite, we accidentally went to an IVF clinic and we accidentally spent a lot of money. And also people's patience for that sort of stuff, which is understandable.
Quite right. You know? Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So I do try to sort of, you know, right. When people ask, I just go, the kids are fine and I'm fine. And then I keep it at that. Because if I go down that wormhole, I only ever really indulge it with other parents. And I'll go, well, I'm just going to tell you because I know you're not going to judge me.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet to really open the taps, isn't it, when you can? And really...
Particularly if I've enjoyed it. And I very rarely talk about my kids when I'm, you know, away for the weekend with gigs, but every now and again, if it comes up and it's with someone who I like and I trust, then I'll think to myself, I'll do a pint's worth of chat about the kids and then we'll change the subject. And that's quite cathartic.
Oh my God, it turns out I like my kids, Jen. Fuck, I didn't know this. Oh God. Thank you for making me finally realise it's only taken me 8 years.
Oh, I bought so many embarrassing things, pink CDs and a toddler, that's it.
What we're going to do now, I am going to go to the last few purchases. Now, of course, this will be a bit of a lockdown special because we're recording this at the end of May 2020 during the corona lockdown. So let's just see what's been going on with your lockdown. And there are some, still buying books for your mum. You're caring for your mum. Presumably, is she self-isolating?
She is, yeah. She's self-isolating, so I'm trying to buy her little treats and books and bits and bobs to keep her busy.
You bought her The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett. Now, I don't know if you like Ken Follett. I absolutely love Ken Follett books. They are enormous, and you lose yourself in them, and they are so shit, but so good.
Well, my mum has just finished the Shard Lake series by C.J. Sansom, which I've read as well. And
amazing,
she
I love them.
Absolutely loves them. Yes. And I was trying to find a sort of British, you know, I don't know, historical fiction that she might be able to lose herself in. So I tried to do a bit of research and that came up. And I thought, I'll just take a risk.
Get like, Ken Follett on the case, mate. No, she'll love Ken Follett.
Really? They're not shit.
No. It might be a bit shit. they sort of tread the line between being a bit, this is just cock, but also, oh, this is great. You know what I mean? You do.
Okay.
Can I recommend then The Doll Factory, if you want a bit of good historical fiction? Because I'm, as I speak to you, I'm looking at the books nearest to me. Look, here I am touching them. All of my C.J. Sansoms. I've got all of my C.J. Sansoms in a line because I'm obsessed with them. So,
they're great.
They're amazing. They're such great books. Okay, all right, let's see what's been going on with you then in the last few weeks of lockdown. I'm going to come to the most recent things of all.
I don't think I've made many purchases.
Here's something for Maureen. You can buy 3 series of Babylon Berlin with this. Explain, please.
Oh, so Maureen and I were supposed to go to the theatre for her birthday in January. Right. And then she ended up having to go to hospital.
Right.
So so the tickets I bought, we couldn't get refunds for it. Then I said, don't worry, we'll go sometime in the spring to the theatre to see something that she wanted to go and see.
I see.
And then obviously that couldn't happen. So I said to her, you know, is there anything you want to watch or there's anything? She was like, oh, I really... Babylon Berlin, blah blah blah, and I was like, great, I'll just. So I just, what I would have spent on a ticket to the theatre, I spent on 3 series of Babylon Berlin.
Babylon Berlin, set in 1929, follows the city in the grip of radical change through the eyes of police inspector Garion Rath.
It's absolutely brilliant. It's
is
set
it?
It's set during the Weimar Republic.
Yeah.
Just after, so Germany is still reeling from losing the First World War.
Yeah.
There's lots of men wandering around who have got terrible PTSD. The country is moving towards quite a hedonistic time.
Yeah.
And there's lots of, you know, unrest because, and also in 1929, there's the great crash.
Yes.
So Germany is fucked.
Ah, oh, so fucked.
So very
good job there haven't been any more big economic crashes since, though. Thank God that was the last one. Oh, God. But who is Maureen, please? Who is Maureen?
Maureen Younger, she's a stand-up comedian. She's my very dear friend. And podcasts and bits and bobs together.
Very nice. Okay, yeah. Good. Well, this is the great thing about our digital lives. We can sustain them and we can give each other nice things, all thanks to websites like this. It's what we like about this
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
Can I recommend, by the way, if you're into your Germany during the 20s and 30s, book form, the Bernie Gunter novels by Philip Kerr. Have you read those?
No.
Amazing, intricate, clever, detailed, noir, Berlin noir crime. They're fantastic.
Okay, so what's the Philip Kerr and...
Philip Kerr is the name of the writer, and the character is called Bernie Gunter, G-U-N-T-H-E-R.
Okay, I'll check those out.
I'm obsessed with them. I've got about 4 left. Sadly, Philip Kerr died a couple of years ago, but I've got about 4 books left to read, and then I will have completed the series, but they are so, so very, very good. So
okay, I'll check this out.
So what I'm going to do, Jen, final thing I'm going to do before I lose you, and what a brilliant story your shopping list is told. We've had the person doing open spots in Australia, and then suddenly you're off to Adelaide, and the things have happened for you, and your career has flown, and it's so well deserved. And the kids are ruining everything, and I can hear them right now as I make this speech. It's so perfect. And then here we are on your wish list, things that you want to buy. Just a very quick look at the wish list, and we've got 2 pairs of Birkenstocks. So that's really been a thing.
You're joking.
Birkenstock women's adult sandals, Tango Red, and some Birkenstock flip-flops. So you're really splashing out there, going for the flip-flop.
Oh, my God. I want to kill myself. That's so embarrassing. Kill myself is a bit fun. I certainly feel a little bit humiliated by that revelation. But anyway, let's not dwell on it. No. I think we've heard enough from me.
I think it just makes it everything so perfect that, you know, one day...
I can't believe that was like one of the first purchases, and now it's what... Yeah. Still on my wish list, like the loser I am.
You are. Oh, your story is punctuated by Birkenstocks. You need to buy some, then you can throw your old Birkenstocks at your neighbour.
I'm actually wearing Birkenstocks at the moment. So
of course you are. Of course you are. It's so perfect. I love it. Listen, Jen, I could talk to you all day, but we must stop for our listeners have other things to do. Thank you so much for doing my Mailbot Toaster. Can I ask you, please, how do we find you online? What are you up to at the moment? What should the listeners come after you and find from you, please?
D dear God, what can you do? I mean, literally, my tour was cancelled. So I imagine I'll be on tour at some point. All of those dates will be on my website, jenbrister.co.uk. I've written a book. It's called The Other Mother by Jen Brister. It's a comedy memoir about being a parent, which is available, actually, very weirdly, on Amazon and other bookstores. It's a wonderful book. Please do buy that. And otherwise, I'm at home, aren't I?
Great. So we'll see you at home. We'll know where to find you. She's got the keyed car next to the angry lady. That's where she
is. Oh, God, please. I hope she... What are the chances? She doesn't even know who I am.
Do you think she listens to podcasts?
I don't think she knows who... She doesn't even know my name, so...
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I feel quite bad about that. I'm actually at this moment looking at my window to see if she's there.
Just to check what second she's not listening, somehow listening to the podcast from the future.
I just literally wouldn't surprise me if she had those powers.
Oh my God, pack your Birkenstocks. It's time to move. Jen, thank you very much. Lots of love. See you soon. All the best. Kind regards. Thanks for doing My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Thank you, Tom.
The fantastic Jen Brister. Her book is great. She's gorgeous. She's so funny. If you get the chance to go and see her live, then do yourself a favour and go and check her out. She's great. Her tour, I'm sure, will be back on its legs and she'll be going around the country doing her wonderful thing in no time. I mean, I say no time, probably in a couple of years when all this is blown over. How are you? Hope you're doing okay. Thank you so much for listening to My Mate Bought a Toaster. I'll be back next week. I've got some more lovely guests lined up and that's it, really. I don't really have anything else to say. I like this bit. I like this bit when it's just you and me at the end. It's no. Any questions? No, okay, fine. All right. You know what to do. Follow us on Twitter at ToasterPod. And what else? Oh, reviews. I mean, you know, we've had a couple. It's fine. It's good. It's all good and grand. And just once more, thanks for listening. More great guests coming. That's really the headline news which I've saved for the end. Shall I go? Okay, I'll go. Bye bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Oh, hello you. My name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Dave Cribb.
You should come and join us every day. We do a podcast called Cabin Fever, where we talk to loads of comedians who've had to cancel everything else in their lives, so they come on our podcast instead, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's an isolation podcast.
Dave, were you yawning at the start of that sentence then? Was it just a little yawn?
Yeah, it's basically the Great Big Owl isolation podcast. We'll have people on from all our podcasts, from your Rule of Threes, your Brian and Rogers, your Musicals, your Bitchins. If you like any of our podcasts, if you like any of those people, chances are they'll be logging onto the Zoom call and just chatting, because let's face it, they got nothing else to do.
Also, there'll be a quiz on the bill. All right, see you soon. Lots of love.
Cabin FE 83709. Oh, that's our Twitter name.